If you ask me, nothing stinks more than when your husband Dutch ovens you with a big, ripe, juicy one and then holds your head down under the covers. Except maybe body odor. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Lumi Whole Body Deodorant. Lumi delivers outrageous 72-hour odor control everywhere, from your pits to your feet, and yes, even those private parts. As a special offer, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code and link. Use code BUNNY, B-U-N-N-I-E, at LumiDeodorant.com. That's LumiDeodorant.com. You guys know I absolutely love Lumi. I rock it everywhere I go. I work long hours, so if I'm doing like a podcast run or if I'm out at one of my husband's shows or just overall anxiety ridden and I'm sweating, Lumi has saved me so many times, especially a toasted coconut. I feel like it masks my odor a little bit more, and especially that right armpit that always smells like beef stroganoff. If you know, you know. Once again, as a special offer for listeners, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code. And if you combine the 15% off with the already discounted starter pack, that equals over 40% off their starter pack. Use code BUNNY, B-U-N-N-I-E, for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That's code BUNNY, B-U-N-N-I-E, at LumiDeodorant.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Is this thing on?
All right, gentlemen, coming to main stage next, this is Bunny. Get up there. She's got a tornado of titties coming your way. Get those dollar bills ready. She's got an ass that shakes like Michael J. Fox. So get up there and throw them dollars.
Dude, that is fucking iconic. What's up, you sexy motherfuckers? Welcome to another episode of Dumb Blonde. Today, we have the dynamic duo. We have an icon in our midst. It's motherfucking Little White.
What it do, baby?
What up, baby? And Mrs. White. Can I just refer to you as Mrs. White, or do you want me to call you Nicole?
Mrs. White.
I love Nicole. Me and Nicole are homies outside of here, but I just wanted to know what the proper terminology was.
For these purposes, I'll be Mrs. White.
Okay, gotcha.
Professional only, yeah.
Thank you guys for coming to Nashville. You guys are in Memphis, right?
Yeah.
Well,
Bartlett, we don't live in Memphis.
Oh, you don't? Do you live outside of Memphis?
The burbs.
It's like Franklin to Nashville.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Like, you say, I live in Nashville, but it's technically like
the burbs. Nope. Isn't it crazy? Whenever Jay and I moved from, actual Nashville, like a little apartment in Nashville, out to the suburbs, we were like, property value went down.
We brought our property value.
How the fuck did we get here?
Our crazy.
Across
the street neighbor is a Shelby County sheriff, and he hates me.
Oh no.
Well, I may allegedly have called him a racist pig one night.
Oh, fuck.
Allegedly, this is what I was told. I don't remember it, so it didn't happen. You know
right?
What I mean?
No, I totally understand that.
We are friends with Bartlett cops now, though. So we're like. They like know which cars are ours, so they like leave us alone.
I got a little coin that says it's basically a get out of jail free card.
I love it.
I do too.
I just try to lay low out here, man. I got pulled over and I think I have a warrant now because I haven't gotten a ticket in so long.
That truck is sick. I ain't never seen it in person. That thing is clean.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love that color on the wrap.
Oh, no, me too, dude. I'm all about. I told him I wanted the Elton John of G-Wagons.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it. You definitely got it.
You understood the assignment completely.
Dude, love it. I'm so happy you're here, White. Dude, you don't realize how much of an icon you are. Or maybe you do. Do you realize how much of an icon you are?
I'm humble. I mean, I get it.
No, you don't need to be humble here. Just flex those nuts, baby.
For example, we just ate brunch at Ruby Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
Ruby Sunshine. And we were leaving, and there was a whole family sitting at the table across from us. I kept seeing... they kind of out the corner of her eyes looking at us. And we walked out. I was going to the car, and this little young girl walks up. She's maybe, what, 16, 17. She's like, I thought she was fixing to ask me for some money the way she walked up. But her baby was like fresh to death. So I was like, this bitch don't need no money.
Right.
What is she about to ask? She's like, I'm sorry to bother you, but my mom wants a picture with you.
Aww.
And I was like, your mom? She was like, yeah, so my mom's been a fan of yours for the last 20 years. And I was like, okay, so that puts your mom at about 42.
But how does that make you feel, though? Do you like it? Like,
I love it. I mean, like, and I've
I hate it. I won't go out with Jay anymore because of it.
Well, I tell this to everybody, and I've been saying this for a long time. Juicy told me 20 years ago, Juicy J said, when the pictures and autographs stop, it's over.
Right. Well, that's true.
And as long as, you know, as long as one or two a week roll through, I'm still good.
Yeah.
The boys still got it.
I hate it. When I go out with Jay, like, we'll try to have, like, date nights, and
you just got to rent out the whole building and just hide in the back corner.
Literally, I can't even get a date night alone with him because he's taking pictures and, you know, signing autographs all night. So it's like, if we go out, it's like we have to go out of town.
Well, I mean, to be honest, he's hard to miss, and ma'am, you're definitely hard to miss
also. Like, you guys aren't. Like,
I
mean, come on.
Yeah, and that's why, like, even when we go out, we got like one bar we go to.
Yeah.
And it's Sidecar. It's my little spot. I've been going there forever. And we just go there. Everybody's like, why do y'all always go here? It's like, because I can be myself here.
Right.
They call me Patrick here. My name is Pat here. People don't call me Lil White here. These are my biker buddies and stuff. Yeah.
We have our own seats. Like, if someone's sitting there and we walk in, they'll be, hey, sorry, Nicole. Sorry, Pat. We can sit somewhere else.
Well,
like,
yeah. I put a White Music logo sticker on one of the napkin holders on the bar. And like, if we walk in and somebody's sitting there, they'll look at it and be like, oh, sorry, bro. Let me slide down. I'm like, dude, I'm not that boozy, but yeah, get out my fucking seat.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know.
Well, one night we were in there and I went to smoke a cigarette out back and I pushed my seat forward onto the bar. You know, when you fold your seat up to let somebody know you're sitting there.
Yeah.
Had my food sitting there, pack of cigarettes, some keys, and this guy, and keep in mind, I don't remember what the occasion was, but they don't need one to be drunk. I was drunk. And the bartender was like, hey, is anybody sitting here? And she was like, Tasha was like, yeah, somebody's obviously sitting here. So he slides all my shit down, pulls my chair down, and just sits down. Allegedly, somebody pulled a knife on him. I don't know who that guy was.
There's a lot of alleged shit going on around you, White.
It's 2021. I'm not going to incriminate myself. Yeah, I'm not doing that. So there's gonna be a few allegeds around in this podcast.
No, listen, I know how you guys roll. I get it. So let's go. I want to just kind of paint a picture. I know everybody knows, you know, Lil White, Oxycontin, all that stuff, but do they really know like your backstory, like where you grew up, like your childhood and stuff like that? So I kind of want to paint that picture. Like, did you grow up in Memphis?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I grew up
born and raised in Fraser, a little hood right in North Memphis. Born and raised, I mean, we were actually like, and you know, we were probably one of the last white families to live in that neighborhood before it got just real bad.
Yeah.
And when my dad passed away, well, I moved out as soon as that first check hit. As soon as that first Dial Me Now check hit, I was out.
Well, did you, so you said that, did when you, hold on a second, let me grab my words here. When you were born in Memphis, whatever, mm-hmm. And then we're gonna slow it down and get to the money. But were you born into money, or was it like poverty stricken?
My dad was a heating and air conditioning man. My mom worked at Kroger. No, we were definitely poor.
Did you always like rapping? Like, were you always into rap, or did you like music, or was that like your thing?
There's actually a picture somewhere. I'm sure my little brother's got it. But there was a picture of me jumping on my bed at like 5 with a guitar singing Born in the USA.
Oh, definitely.
So I've always been interested in music. Crisscross, Totally Crossed Out was the first actual rap album I bought.
Right.
Because my parents actually let me buy it because Walmart had it on cassette or Kmart.
Somebody try to rhyme, but they can't rhyme like this. Somebody try to rhyme. I loved Crisscross.
So that's
how old we are, ladies
exactly,
and gentlemen.
Yeah. I'm 142 million years old.
Shit, I am fucking forever 26 because the internet says. The internet says I'm fucking 26.
I'll be your older sister.
Yeah, whatever, dude. I'll fucking be eternal. I'm a vampire, bitches.
I think my soul was created during the Big Bang. I feel like I've been here forever.
Yeah.
But I guess around like 10 years old, I really got into like rap music. I liked it. So I would have to hide my rap CDs behind. Me and her were just talking about this the other day. She had to hide the Chronic album behind a Britney Spears CD. And
I got in so much trouble when my mom found that too.
The Britney Spears CD?
No, the Chronic CD.
Oh, gotcha.
The one that had the weed leaf on it.
Mm-hmm. And did you grow up in Memphis too? Mm-hmm. Is that where, like, did you guys know each other as kids or when did you guys meet?
She grew up on the whole other side of Memphis than I did.
Oh, gotcha. Was she the suburb baby?
No, I was the other side of the hood.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
She was North Memphis and I was
East Memphis, basically.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
But about 10 years old, I really got into rap, and the guy that lived across the street, rest in peace, Jimmy Collins. He built speaker boxes for like the whole neighborhood. He, you know, go by the wood, pay him $150. He'll build a speaker box. So I would be real young sitting over there with him just watching him build speaker boxes. And after he was done, he'd always pull out like some old 666 Mafia cassette before they were 3/6. And he would test out the bump with that. So like every time he got a new 3/6 Mafia tape, he would let me take it across the street, get a blank cassette, burn it before my dad got home from work, and I'd write like holiday classics on it or something, like to where he would never know. And then once CDs came out, my dad broke so many 3/6 Mafia CDs
because when he was first it because heard he thought it was oh because they were graphic
just the okay. graphic content mm-hmm. shit like I mean, once he when he first heard and I had I was that kid that would go to like I'd cut grass in the summertime and I'd go to like yard sales, and if I seen like a set of speakers for sale, my eyes would light up. So like by the time I was like 12, I had like 40 speakers, and looking back now, you need a big receiver to push 40 speakers, and I had right? like this little Sony boombox, which was definitely a fire hazard because I probably had 600 wires running behind this stuff. And one day my dad came home early from lunch and heard me bumping Slob on my knob, and he just snapped it in half, just broke it.
I was always in trouble for singing Madonna in church.
Like a virgin?
I actually got in trouble for singing Like a Virgin on some grandpa's lap.
Oh, wow.
I was a kid. I didn't know what was happening, but
you
I was
still listening. Do very similar things there, buddy. I know. Some like, people never change, you know.
Listen, I was a whore from birth, all right?
I got in trouble for trying to go to a church Halloween party dressed as a devil.
Oh,
apparently
no.
Frowned upon.
Yeah, it is frowned upon.
I got fried in church and they sent me home. I was like,
you walked in and they were like, no, bitch.
You talk about them in the Bible. So technically, like, and it's a Halloween party. I'm just trying to bring all the characters to life.
Thought I was doing right.
We were born
rebels. Was an angel that fell from heaven, you know, Jesus. But like, I'm not going to fast forward too far, but we can go back. But like, it's funny because when I did sign the 3/6 Mafia, my dad walked right up to Paul and Juicy and was like, because I was 17 when I signed. They had to sign my contract. My dad walked right up to Paul and was like, do you know how many of your CDs I've broken?
And Paul probably loved it.
I'm having to sign my son's contract. He was like, I'm actually glad you did break them CDs. He was like, why? He was like, wait, did you go buy another one? I was like, of course I did. He was like, see? He just kept the sales going. You can break all his CDs if you want to.
That's awesome. So moving forward, you know, dad's breaking all the 3/6 Mafia CDs. Was there any other people who inspired you besides 3/6 Mafia, or were you just like, dude, I'm going to be a part of 3/6 Mafia no matter what?
Well, I was a big Memphis rap fan, period. Al Capone, 8-Ball, MJG, Skinny Pimp.
I love me some 8-Ball and MJG. I was listening to him yesterday.
We were just with them at the Grizzlies
game.
They're
some cool ass.
I want them to come on the podcast. I love them.
I can make that happen.
Okay,
for
cool.
Sure.
Yeah. I love 8-Ball.
But I was a big fan of all the guys, you know, like Skinny Pimp. Matter of fact, Skinny Pimp, when Skinny Pimp King of the Players Ball album dropped, that was the very first verse on Midnight Hose that I memorized the day it came out and went to school the next day and floated for the cafeteria, and everybody thought that was my lyrics.
Did you always have a flow, like, or did you have to practice it? Because you know how some rappers have to like practice and find their sound, or was it just natural
for
you?
I had my partner, Lil Black. He actually gave me the name Lil White. Because everybody just called me Lil Pat, and he's like, Lil Pat ain't going to go nowhere. He's like, I'm Lil Black, and he was a Crip, so he spelled his B-L-A-C-C. He was like, spell it different, kind of like the word hype, but make it W-Y-T-E. And I was like, that actually might work. So what we would do is we would go to the lunchroom, and we didn't battle. We just freestyled and rapped. And
freestyling, I feel, is harder than just
if
you were to write.
Oh, your one of the kings of it. Trust me.
I know, and I get so mad because I want him to do more freestyles, and he fucking won't.
Well, even back when we were working a lot together, back when even when he was living in Memphis there for a while with me, you know, I told him, Jelly, you got to start writing this stuff down because if somebody could just come in and say they wrote that, if you don't have no mm-hmm. documentation of writing this down, or at least jot down the main, because he would literally write down his rhyming words and just tack it onto the wall, and he would just freestyle, just add the rhyming word, freestyle. And it's incredible watching him work that back in them days like mm-hmm. that. But I never really was. I was a writer. I've always been a writer. So what I would do, we had lunch right before biology class, and I hated biology class. The teacher knew it. He didn't even give me no problems. So what I would do every day, about the last 20 minutes of class, I'd write me a quick little 16-bar verse, and I'd memorize it in that last 20 minutes. So I'd go to the lunch table, no paper, no nothing in my hand, and it'd go around each person. And they always saved me for last because I was the only white boy at the table. Mm. And I just released this information since we've been together in the last few years.
A false freestyler.
I was a false flagging freestyler.
Oh shit!
So, but
hold on. If you wrote the lyrics, isn't that still considered freestyle?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, okay. It is. But like even back then, they were like, nobody knew I had a notebook full of raps.
Did
like,
it have to be off the dome to be considered freestyle?
Off the dome to be considered freestyle, yeah. But nobody knew that it wasn't off the dome because I kept it a secret, literally up until the last 5 years ago. I did an interview with somebody and I told them, and they were like, that's pretty smart. But it was funny because everybody was like, how the hell does he fucking do this? Like, how does he do this?
He's like, I was rehearsing in the boys' bathroom.
Swear to God, dead serious. I'd be in there whispering it to myself. All right.
Able to memorize that too in that short amount of time is actually pretty.
That was another thing that tripped everybody out because it's not easy to memorize a whole 16 bars.
I can't even remember fucking Mr. Grinch, and that song's been around forever. I had to have the fucking lyrics in the fucking booth, you know?
He still does it too. Like, people get mad. Like, when he's got to record a feature, there's like, he'll be in there writing the verse and stuff, and he'll drop it like one take, Jake, and be done. Like, man, I ran the studio for 8 hours. And he's like,
you fucking wasted some money, buddy.
That's how Daddy is.
I'm hungry. I got shit to do.
Yeah, no, that's how Jay is too. He's you guys are just one of the goats, together. You know?
I mean, when we was on the road back in the day, when we was constantly going and going and going, we'd have like a little powwow in the van before we pull up to the studio. I'm like, all right, Bubba, you're going to go in here, you write your fucking verse, knock it out, I'm a freestyle mind, we'll be on the road in 45 minutes.
And
we'll be at Outback Steakhouse, Bubba, in 45 minutes, I'm fucking starving, and I got to take a shit.
You know what, to even hear, to take a shit part, I believe, but to even hear my husband try to plan out something is hilarious, because I have to plan everything. Nah, that dude is like a hot air balloon. I got to catch him and bring him down to earth.
Plan everything. I am just...
That's hilarious. Okay, so you went from doing, you know, freestyle, quote unquote, battles in school, and then when did you decide, hey, you know what, I'm gonna start taking this in the studio and I want to record an album?
Well, so I guess my sophomore year in high school, it got to the point where all the football players, it got to the point to where after I'd been rapping for 2 or 3 years in school, people would come over to the lunch table just for my verse. Mm. And they would just wait. They listen to everybody else's verse. And then by the time I was done, they'd just be like, oh, God, it fucking went crazy. So seeing the response from my peers is what really made me want to pursue it. And then the 3-6 Mafia album, The End, they had, and they've never done this before, but they put just an instrumental at the very end of that album. Just an instrumental, no lyrics or nothing. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to use this instrumental. Because, I mean, back in the day, you couldn't buy beats in the 90s and shit. People weren't doing that.
No. You can buy them off, fucking anywhere the internet now.
Yeah,
it's
you can
crazy.
Have somebody text you a beat now.
Yeah.
But, so I literally went home, popped that CD in, got my other little player, hit play record, and rapped into that little tiny little microphone and made my first demo tape. So I took it to the guys that was in my neighborhood that – they had a little 3-4 white guy rap group. It was the only white boys in the neighborhood that could rap. And I just came to them. They were 3-4 years older than me. I was like, look, y'all need one more person. Here's my demo. And it was like a cassette. I'm like, play the motherfucker. Trust me. And they did. They liked me. They ended up getting on that out. Their next mixtape. And my dad, one night we were all out in front of my mom and dad's house. It was 10 o'clock. We're all beating on the back of my mom's Cutlass, making the beat and stuff. And that actual night, I did freestyle some stuff just off the top of my head.
You felt like the pressure to have to do it?
Well, yeah. Well, not only that. It was me and some of my closest friends that know I can rap.
Right.
And I went inside to get like a glass of sweet tea or something, and my dad had been sitting on the porch in the dark the whole time listening to us. I didn't even know he was up there. So as I'm walking by, he's like, "Hey," and I was like, "Whoa, shit, you scared the fuck out of me." He's like, "Was that you?" I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "When all your black buddies just went, ah, was that you that did that?" I was like, "Yeah, that was me." And he was like, "Well, I get my income tax check in like 2 weeks. What could you do with $1,500? Could you make a demo?" Aww. And I was like, "Fuck yeah, I could. I'll bring you the receipt. I will spend every penny of that shit on a demo."
He went from breaking CDs to making your first CD.
Realizing that I had it was something there. So sure enough, like 2 weeks go by. He walks in my bedroom. I'm sitting there like playing video games or some shit. He just gives me a check, $1,500. And he was like, "Take that to the bank, put that in your account, and start doing what the fuck you said you was gonna do." And within 3 months, me and the other guys had a full demo tape made up. And just for the record, they never paid my dad a penny from that shit. I don't mess with them no more anyways. But like 5-6 years go by. This is after I'm already with 3-6, and I had a real nice fat little check come in, and I was like, "I'm finna pay dad back tenfold." I took dad $15,000 cash and just set it. I set it on the coffee table. I basically made it rain on the coffee table. He was like, "What is this?" I was like, "This is your 100% return.
This is your investment.
This is your 100% return investment." He was like, "You, I don't need this." I was like, "It's not about needing it. I needed that $1,500, so this is yours."
Aww.
And he was like, "Are you good?" I was like, "I still got $140,000 in the bank. I'm straight." He's like, "Don't worry about me."
Aww.
And that weekend, he went and bought a bass boat and a motorcycle.
Oh, he's living his best life.
He was, man.
So,
rest in peace, Pops.
I know. Dude, that makes me so sad. I think one thing that is probably the hardest thing to ever watch is your spouse go through losing a parent. Like, Jay is still, he can't talk about it without crying.
Even like when, when Buddy passed, you know, I reached out to Jelly like immediately.
Yeah.
And because I know what he's going through. And when we were at the Ryman, I said, "You know they're up there watching you, right?"
Mm-hmm.
He was like, "How the fuck you think we got here?" He's like, "We've always had them guardian angels watching us."
Mm-hmm. No, that shit's, I hate it. Because you can hear the pain in your voice when you talk about your dad, you know, so.
I mean, but at the same time, you know, like.
And the love.
It's crazy. It's like he passed in 08, and now like every year for his birthday, we throw him a big ass birthday party. She throws him a party. For years,
that's
we were
a good wifey.
The first couple of years, we would throw a party like a cookout on the day he died. But then the older I get, I've woken up the last 3 years and just couldn't figure out why I'm in a fucked up mood.
No.
And by the end of the night, I'm like, fuck, today was the day dad died. That's why. So. The healing process of that is getting better for the simple fact that date don't bother me no more that bad. But we always make sure we throw the fuck down on his birthday. Like the first year she did it as a surprise.
Oh my God, it's so hard. I was like fiending Xanax on the way home from a show. I'm like, "Just go to sleep."
She's like, "Just here, eat that. I got some phone calls.
You want some Crown? You want to take a nap?" Wendell, drive faster.
Yeah.
I should have brought my Crown.
Is Wendell still around? I remember when I met you guys 6 years ago, he was around.
We're still super good friends. He don't work for me no more.
Gotcha.
I just talked to him the other day after, Wes Phillips passing.
Yeah, that's fucking horrible, man.
All right.
It's crazy, especially when people like our age are passing. It's just like, bro.
I mean, he's only 6 months older than me, and I'm 39. Like, so.
Yeah, just
it's
crazy.
Scary. It's terrifying.
Well, let's bring it back. So, did you meet Jay before you signed with 3-6 or after?
It was actually right after. I'd say 6 months after Doubt Me Now, my first album dropped. So this was like 2003, 2004.
Well, let's talk about you signing with 3-6, and then we'll get into you and Daddy Roll. But Daddy Roll. So you dropped your first album with your dad's money that he invested.
Right.
And then from there, what happened?
So the guys that I was rapping with at the time, it's actually a pretty crazy story. Like, so I was working at this warehouse. It was like a warehouse for FedEx.
I could not see you working in a warehouse.
I don't like people. So
yeah, I was going to say, you would have a bunch of alleged situations going on.
I mean, my very last job was a manager at Blockbuster. Who the fuck makes me a manager? I was stealing DVDs, allegedly, and all kind of shit.
I was still renting Little Mermaid at that same Blockbuster.
Yeah,
that sounds hilarious.
It sounds fucked up when she says it.
I wonder if you guys crossed paths.
We had to, because I worked like every day, and Little Mermaid was always rented out. But like, so the day, so I was working at this warehouse. It was actually like a off-site warehouse for FedEx. Where like, I guess you'd say like the employee catalog, where they order like golf balls and shit like that. Just like mugs and It was one of those little small warehouses, and I was working there. We were listening to K97 that day, and Mike, my supervisor, I'll never forget it. Paul and Juicy were like, "Hey, just to let y'all know, we're in the process of looking for a couple new artists. If y'all see us in the street, give us your demo. Don't be afraid to walk up and speak. You know, we're genuine dudes. We're good people. Just come holler at us. Give us your demo."
I had
just given Mike, my supervisor, the demo the day before. Because I went and got like 500 cassettes pressed up, packaged, barcodes, the whole nine. Brought my dad back his 17 cents.
Those were the days, back in the days.
God, I miss them days.
I know.
And Mike's like, "Man, you should just leave work right now and go to K97. And I said, "Mike, I got a baby on the way. I can't lose this job. Like, my baby mama's 3-4 months pregnant, whatever she was at the time." So come to find out, I get home later on that night. I can still taste that night. My mom made fucking spaghetti with chef salads and fucking French bread. I still remember it like it was yesterday. So I just got off work. I'm making my plate. The phone rings. My dad answers it. It was house phone, of course.
My dad answers
the house phone. My dad's like, "Pat, telephone. It's your boy," or whatever. And I answered. He's like, "Bro, so today, 36 Mafia was at K97. We took them our demo." I was like, "What?" He was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Bullshit." He was like, "No, they want to meet with us like tomorrow or the next day." I'm like, "Dude, look, I just got off work. I'm hungry. I ain't got time for this shit.
I don't got Click. Time for these games."
I hung up on him. He calls me right back immediately. He's like, "This is not a drill. 36 Mafia has our demo. They listened to it, and within an hour, they called us back." So like, I go back to work the next day, and I tell Mike, I'm like, "Dude, the world works in mysterious ways." And I told him about them going to drop the demo off and me not having to lose my fucking job. And, he was like, "Well, what you need me to do?" I said, "Look, one of them's supposed to call tomorrow afternoon at 5. He's like, "So what's the big deal?" I was like, "I don't get off work till 6. He's like, "Not tomorrow. You're getting off at 4:30 tomorrow. You need this." Because he was like, he really wanted me to win.
Yeah.
And it was your number on the mixtape.
Yeah, and it was my mom and dad's phone number on the back of the mixtape. The house number was on the back of the mixtape. So, like, my fucking house number blew up. Every day, because once they got into circulation,
oh yeah,
we were like the most talked about shit in our neighborhood. Everybody knew something was about to happen between either all of us or one of us,
right?
And I go over to dude's house, and he's like out on the front porch on the phone. He's like, hold on 1 minute, I'm gonna have everybody around the speakerphone." And I'm cracking a joke. I'm like, "Ooh, who's that DJ Paul?" And he comes to the phone. He goes, "No, it's fucking Juicy J. Shut up." And I was like. I'm like, "Is this shit real?" Because I'm still in disbelief. So we crowd around the old conference phone, put it on speakerphone, and sure enough, "Hey guys, what's up, man? This is Juicy J, man. Hey, man, I just wanted to let y'all know, man, y'all got some hard shit, man. And man, we want to meet you guys, man. Y'all can come to the studio tomorrow." I called Mike as soon as we left that meeting. I said, "Mike, I will not be coming into work tomorrow because they want to really see us. This shit is real." So we ended up going up there.
How are you feeling? Were you like nervous?
Well,
as fuck?
The problem was, I think all three of the other guys in the group saw me as a threat because I was younger.
Well, and I was easier with marketable. Probably the talent.
The talent.
The sexiness.
Yes. My
I'll let you speak on that
my
one.
My overall sexiness. So I get home and I'm calling all the guys like, "Hey, man, we got to be at the studio." It's going straight to voicemail. Every one of them. I'm like, "These motherfuckers done left me." And they did.
Wow. And so they were hating from the gate. And your dad is the one that fucking invested in the damn CD.
And then it hit me. Go to the caller ID. I scrolled back.
Oh my God, I remember caller ID. I was like, caller ID.
I scrolled back like 3 days, and sure enough, Hypnotized Mind Studio was one of the missed calls that they called during the day. I was at work. My dad was at work.
They probably wanted you anyways.
I'm getting to it.
Okay. I was going to say, they probably, it was you that
I remember 281-1117. I still remember the fucking number. That's so crazy, man. So I called the number, and Poncho, their old security that worked the front desk in the reception little area, answers, and he's like, "Hypnotized Minds, what's up?" I was like, "Hey, this is Lil White. Are there three white rappers in there?" He's like, "Yeah, it's supposed to be four of them, though, is what I heard." I was like, "Yeah, it's me. What's the damn address to the studio? These motherfuckers left me." He's like, "Oh, that's messed up, man." He's like, "301 Washington Avenue, Suite 302, pound 1802 at the gate." Still remember that shit like this. Nothing. So I pull up, I'm in my mom's two-door Cutlass, baby blue.
Oh my God, I wrecked one, a green one.
And man, 76. I pull up and I'm like, if this code actually works, this is going to be amazing. So I'm like, pound 1802. Gate opens up. I pull around. There's like Mercedes everywhere and Rolls Royce.
Oh, you know Paul and his fucking
fancy schmancy car.
It's a Capricorn thing.
When I saw that goddamn big body Benz, blacked out, black rims, and just I was like, well, I'm here. And then I looked underneath the back.
I have arrived.
I looked underneath the where you could see the back, like the parking spot, and it said parking for Hypnotized Minds, DJ Paul, Juicy J. I was like, this is insane. So I went upstairs. I opened the door. When Poncho opened the door, let me. It was so weird because when I got to the door, I could see my reflection in the wood door. And I was just like, this is happening. This is fucking really happening. 3-6 Mafia is on the other side of this door. And I'd never been to a concert.
Were you going
to
shit your pants?
I never met him. I never attempted to meet him. And I walk in, and Paul's sitting in like a swivel chair, like just an office chair or whatever. And he's watching a game or something. And he spins around real slow, like fucking Dr. Evil or some shit. And he goes, you must be Lil White. And I was like, yeah. And I look around at the other guys in the fucking room like, forget somebody?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, hey, White, we were just about to call you, blah, 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 fuck off.
What so, douchebags.
So right? While we're in there, like within the first 15 minutes that we were there, hey, Juicy, how much you pay for that watch? How much the Mercedes cost outside? Aww. Y'all got some bad bitches? I know y'all got some good drugs in here. And I just stood up and I walked away from that conversation. I walked down the hallway, and in the hallway, it was all their plaques and all their gold and platinum records and shit. And I'm just reading all of them.
It's like surreal.
I'm just reading all of them. And Paul got up from the conversation. And he walked upstairs. And he saw me in the hallway and he put his arm around me and he was like, you want you one of those? I was like, I won't. A lot of these. To be honest. I was like, I refuse to be part of the conversation they're in down there. I was like, because that conversation ain't shit until you get one of these. Mm-hmm. You ain't finna get no fucking car, flashy fucking diamond watch, or none of that shit till you break, make the music and make the money.
Yeah.
Paul was like, you're a smart kid. How old are you? I was like, 17. He was like, fuck, 17? I was like,
baby.
Yeah. He was like, yeah. He was like, how old are they? I'm like, 23, 24, whatever. He was like, okay. He was like, all right, I see what's going on here. So like 6 months go through negotiations and shit. We're all walking on eggshells for 6 months, hoping.
The whole band or the whole group, yeah. Did you guys have a name?
It was the SFC, the Shelby Forest Clique.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm only answering this because it's you, Bunny.
Ah, I love you. That's an exclusive.
It's an exclusive. But so about 6 months go by, we get a call. Both of me and Dale, the main leader dude or whatever, we get a call and he's like, it's our attorney, our music attorney. He's like, I got good news and I got bad news. You know, we all crowded around the fucking conference phone again. And at this point, I'm over at his house and it's like about 15 of them. And I'm there by myself and they've all been like best friends for decades. Mm. And so we're all sitting there and he's like, all right, what's the good news? And dude, the attorney's like, well, the good news is the contract's in and it's a pretty good contract. It's a decent contract for, you know, first time, you know, new artist. He's like, okay, well, what's the bad news? The bad news is it's only for a Lil White solo deal.
Yes.
There's like, but in the boom, process, bitch. If the solo deal goes well, y'all will be on the album and y'all will have a group album afterwards. We're just going to test the waters with the solo deal. And everybody was like, oh, okay, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
They were fucking so pissed.
We hung up the phone, and the main dude, he leans forward. He goes, so what you going to do? You going with them or us?
I mean, you motherfuckers left what? Me. Like, is that even a fucking...
What did you just... Am I going with y'all or 3-6 Mafia? You tell me. So they actually ended up backing me out to my car. Like I had to walk backwards because I was like scared
because like, they wanted to like fight you.
There was 15 of them. They was ready to rip me apart and throw me in the lake next door. And man, I walked backwards to my car. I said, look man, I got some thinking to do. I'm going home. I will call y'all tomorrow. And then like, you know, as soon as I got home, I talked to my dad about it. My dad was like, man, fuck them guys. Them guys still ain't even paid me a penny from the 1500 and none of that shit.
Yeah.
And I called DJ Paul and I was like, because Paul and Juicy both gave me their phone numbers that night at the studio. And they was like, look, we ain't giving out our phone numbers to everybody. But if you need anything, you call me. So I called Paul. I was sitting on the back of my dad's pickup truck, just sitting out there just in disblief of everything just happened. I'm smoking me a blunt to the face.
I mean, and you're still a baby. You're literally 17.
Yeah, I'm
literally
17.
No matter if you're having kids on the way and fucking right. record deals, it's still a lot to take in at that age.
So I called Paul and I'm like, you ain't gonna believe this shit. I'm like, bro, these folks are already beefing with me. He said, oh, y'all must have got the call from the lawyer. I was like, yeah, we did.
I love how Paul's so nonchalant about it.
Yeah, Paul, he's still well, he's always like
fucking
that.
Fucking hilarious. Yeah.
So like, he goes, he's so stupid. I said, guess what they asked me? He said, what? I was like, they asked me what I was going to do. Go with them or go with y'all? He said, so what's the decision you're going to make? I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm on the phone with you. I had to basically run out of their house to keep getting shot.
Yeah.
He was like,
don't fuck this up, Paul.
And he was like, and then next thing you know, for like the next six, probably the next year, every time they would drive by my house, throwing shit at my house, just fucking terrorizing my neighborhood and shit. And, you know, they got the best of us a couple times. We beat the shit out of them a few times. And one fateful evening, after I signed, my parents had to go sign my contract. This was probably a month after I signed my contract. I was out of town somewhere with some friends. I want to say we were at like Spring River or something like that. We were out just doing some redneck white boy shit. Four-wheelers and canoes and stuff. And I get a phone call. One of my partners got a phone call from my dad because my phone was dead. And they were like, Pat needs to come home ASAP. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? Come to find out, they sent a crackhead to my mom and dad's house to whoop my ass. And I wasn't there.
All because they didn't get signed.
Yeah, so they beat the shit out of my mom and gave her brain damage.
Oh, my God.
And it kicked in early stages of dementia and Alzheimer's. And she fucking lost her mind. So like,
oh.
And it's like, they know what they did. You know what I mean?
Are these guys still...
But I don't think they know
the
extent of what happened to her.
Are these guys still around? Like, are they...
Yeah, they're still around.
But, like, are they in prison or are they just fucking losers?
I mean, yeah, one of them... The main guy that did it, he went to jail for accidentally killing his girlfriend.
Oh, sounds like a great person.
And, yeah, I mean, they got karma that's been handed to them left and right. The other, one of the main dudes who started all the bullshit, he's... From what I hear, he's basically a walking deathbed. He's done did so many drugs and just...
I think I got most of them finally like blocked on his social media because they would like, he would like make a post and they'd be like, White stole my lyrics back in the day. And I'm just like,
God, there are people
crack
that,
it, please.
I swear, there's people that do that to Jay too.
Oh,
and
I
it's
know.
Like, literally I'll hit them up and be like, okay, oh, so you guys had a bad business deal. Let me write you a check. Or Jay will be like, let's write you a check if it's such a problem or if it's like a legit issue. And they don't want the money. They just want to talk shit.
They want the you know, talk shit.
They want the clout.
And they want Jelly to be like, yeah, I stole that lyric.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's just, it's, well, people.
And Jelly, and me and Jelly are the same way. If I use someone else's lyric, I'm going to give them props in
absolutely.
That verse. Like you know, I've even quoted a couple of Jelly Roll lyrics, like Totem Pole say something,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but people don't pay homage, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that 9 times out of 10, that's all these motherfuckers want.
Yeah, they just want the clout.
And I don't even do that unless it's one of my partners. Like if it's a DJ Paul or a Juicy Line or something like
yeah.
that. And I'll always pay homage to the person who said it first. And I can tell you, Jelly ain't stole nobody's phone.
No, these are more like people who are like, oh, he slept on our couch and, you know, we funded some of his studio time.
Yeah.
And if it's legit, Jay's like, cool, let's write him a check. And I'll be
right.
like, okay, I'll slide in their DM. Instead of you making a post talking shit about how much of his wife's a whore and fucking all this other shit, let us write you a check. And then they'll be like, no, it's all right. We don't want your money. You just would rather sit there and fucking talk shit. Like, people are just fucking miserable.
People, I mean, they did get off on this.
I literally spend, like, every morning I wake up and I go through all the comments, like even the RIP West stuff. They were talking about him. They were talking about Jelly. They were like, this is, you're missing the whole point. He just lost his best fucking
yeah,
friend
like,
y'all in here. And then they were like putting his song lyrics. Like, don't do the lyrics to Oxycontin on an RIP post.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Or
people don't
like
know how to read
post.
The room.
Hey, man, hey, check out my music. Hey, man. I'm clearly crying right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite.
Do you think I want to listen to your
yeah.
bullshit ass song?
Oh, no. I literally had a post the other day about how I had depression, and I have like fucking 10 people in my DMs asking me for money. It's like, bro, I fucking feel like I want to hang myself today. Like, and you literally, all you're asking me for
can
is
I get
to,
can I hold a hot 20 before you, you know,
oh no, they asked me for, these motherfuckers are like, can you pay like 5,000 for this? I want to get my body. I had people who asked me to get their body done for them. Like, it's just, it's the craziest thing ever. But they, people just don't know how to read a room anymore.
They don't.
You know, the, I said this the other day on a podcast we were doing, the internet has made people comfortable with saying shit that they would never say to somebody's face because they forget that our generation grew up liking to fight. I like to fight.
I still get in trouble. I'm not allowed to fight anybody. The one time I went to swing on somebody, he grabbed me and he like handed me to like two of the big homies. And I'm like, this is bullshit. Like,
let I grabbed her. I had to hook her arm and I was like, take her.
Listen.
If somebody touches her, you big fuckers rip that motherfucker in half.
I don't even I'm so crazy. I can fight. I'm good.
I am so crazy. I want to go through your entire friends list, find your wife, your grandmother. I want to find out where you work. I want to fucking wreck your life. You know, like, I'm that crazy. So, yeah.
People... Oh, your favorite teacher was your third grade English teacher?
Yeah.
That bitch is dead.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right. So let's bring it back. So you signed with, 3-6, and then from there you guys made an your solo album, or you did an album with them?
We made the solo album Doubt Me Now. The first actual track they put me on, it was Crash the Club, and they put it on Project Pat bonus disc.
Project Pat, whoop whoop.
Mr. Pata.
Yeah, he's an Aquarius like me. I just found that out. I was like, I knew I was gangster.
Yeah, yeah,
he is.
So they put it on the, they put it on a bonus disc. And nobody knew I was white. Everybody just thought I was some new artist for 3-6. And I was like, damn, dude, it's hard as fuck. So even though when we ended up coming out and dropping the album, Paul made the album cover black and white, like the Scarface cover, so people still couldn't figure out if I was black or white.
Right. Because I guess just hearing you, you would sound like a black artist.
I mean, I've heard that a lot. I mean, the older I get, I hear my countryness come out, you know? Because like, even though I lived in the hood, you know, I went out to my godfather's farm every summer and stayed the whole summer and got my good old boy shit in.
Mm-hmm. I thought the same thing, though. When I first heard his show, the demo with the group before he got signed, someone actually heard my demo before. I was like, I like that one dude. Who's that? And like, my best friend was dating some little redneck dude out in like Millington. He's like, that's Lil White. And I'm like... Why is his name Lil White? Like, why is a black guy going by Lil White? And they're like, no, he's super cool. And I'm like, whatever, y'all.
Little did you know you'd be slobbing his knob later on in life.
Hell!
I still get so, I still like have like little moments where like if we're in the studio doing something, I'm like, yeah, that's mine. Y'all the bitches couldn't handle that.
Shit, I see Jay in the studio and I'm like, who wants to come suck it? Who's going to suck it tonight?
I swear we were just in the studio with Justin Time. Shout out to Justin Time. We're working on this project.
He's coming on the podcast too.
That's a funny motherfucker. Yeah. He's got to bring his buddy Big Murph with him though. Murph is one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life.
Oh, that's awesome.
But every time I walked out the booth, he had these like, I'm going to fuck the shit out of you guys.
I always like to send them, I'm like, let me see your nutsack. And he'll like go and he'll come back and I'm like, thanks, baby. That's the nutsack I was looking for.
Yeah.
He was like, so I did good. I'm like,
put your balls in this verse, babe. Put your dick and balls in this future.
Just fuck that verse, baby. But, fuck the shit out of that verse.
But yeah, so like after we dropped my first album, Eric, from out here in Nashville, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, fucking, he's yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So, he's come around too a few times in the 6 years Jay and I have been together. Come around us, but reared his ugly head.
He put together a tour with me, Jelly, Stack, Struggle, Alexander King. I want to say Nash Villain was there, and like one or two more people. I can't remember who it was. So, like, we pull up at this hotel in Knoxville, and it's just, like, me and one other my partner that used to ride with me and shit, and DJ.
So, when did you, before you get into that tour, when did you meet Jay?
This is the tour.
Okay, so you didn't even know who they were. You were just going on tour with them.
I knew of Stack. I'd never met Stack. Right. I knew of Stack because I'd heard some of his music. It didn't get played a lot in Memphis because Memphis is just so hood. But I definitely had heard of him, and, I pull up, and of course, it was back in the day, the outdoor hotel rooms with the fucking crime scene
before
the crystal motels, meth lab blew up. And I look up on the second floor balcony, you know, that walks to your rooms, and there's like the goon platoon. And I mean, it's all of them up there. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, it's just me and you. I ain't bringing no gun. I don't know these motherfuckers for shit. And of course, when we first walked up,
I love that you guys are also gangster because people would never think that you guys were, but like Jay moves like that too.
Oh,
like,
Jay, Dad, we're not going to get into his gangster shit. We all know about Jay's gangster
shit. But I just love that you guys are like, you know, gangsters, and it's just like, so you know, you not can, the typical gangster though.
So you can take the girl out the hood, but you can't take the hood out the
exactly,
girl.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So I'm like looking at all these big men. This was back when, you know, Struggle was fat, Jelly was a little bigger than he is now. He had braids down his ass.
So I would have never dated him. Ew.
And I walk upstairs, and Stack sees me first. He goes, there goes a little white right there. And Jelly turns around immediately. He's like, oh, what's up, man? We're all big fans and shit. Struggle walks right up to my face, like as close to this mic is. And he goes, hey, bro, you know you sampled my grandpa? And I'm like, who the fuck is your grandpa? Waylon fucking Jennings. I was like, oh shit, I'm about to die in Knoxville. And he like gave me this mean mug, and I know you've seen it. Mm. Struggle's got that eye. He's like, nah, I'm just fucking with you. My whole family loves that song, man. Y'all killed that shit. I was like, bro, fucking scared the shit out of me there for a minute. I thought you was going to throw me off this balcony. He's like, nah, man, my whole family loves that song. We love what you did with it. And especially being a Juicy J, DJ Paul track, it just makes it even better. He was like, so y'all, you're family with me now. And it was funny. We was only on like a little 10-city run, but it was called the White Boys Can't Rap Tour. And of course, all of us can spit.
Right.
And it was just weird because I was the smallest and Jelly was the biggest. And it was just like, we just clicked. I think it was just that. Like, we would always joke about him being so much bigger than me and me being smaller than all
it's
of
like
them.
It's like Mutt and Jeff. Yeah, the cartoon characters.
Like, it was just like, me and Jelly just clicked. Like, I don't know what it was. Our personalities just clicked. And then, like, I had so much respect for him as an artist when just, you know, his stage presence as such a big dude. You know what I mean? As such a big dude, Jelly would get on that motherfucker and rock that bitch.
Oh, no, he don't fuck around. His stamina on stage, he could be fucking 500 pounds and still fucking just run from one side of the stage to the other and bounce up and down.
My little ass got over here with asthma and I smoke Newports. I'm like, yeah. Slow down, Jelly. Goddamn. Yeah. I can't keep up with your big ass.
Yeah, no, he's got stamina, dude.
We stayed in contact over the phone, you know, throughout the after the tour, and then Jelly got locked up. Mm. And as a matter of fact, Fat Boy from Jackson, Tennessee, calls me one day, and he's like, yo, Jelly Roll's out of jail. And it had been like a few years or whatever since I talked to him. I'm like, damn, for real? He's like, also, I got a feature from Jelly because he just got out, and he was trying to get some money in his pocket, so I threw him a few $100, whatever, drop on the song. He was like, but you got a bigger platform than I got. Can I give you the song, and you put it on your next mixtape? And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. So Jelly found out about that, and he was like, he calls me, he's like, what's up, Bubba? I'm fucking free. And I was like, man, I know, I heard, man. I was like, what are you doing? He was like, man, not shit in the studio. Been in a goddamn studio ever since I got home. And I ain't left this bitch. I've been sleeping on the couch, getting up and rapping some more and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's what's up, man. He goes, look, man, what are you doing today, Bubba? And I was like, not shit. It was like a Wednesday, like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Sounds like my husband's manic ass.
Yeah, he's like, what are you doing today, Bubba? I was like, I'm absolutely nothing, to be honest. He was like, well, listen here. I got about 40 fucking songs I want you to hear. You need to come to Nashville today.
Yeah, and
I was like, oh, okay.
He does have to derail all the time too.
But he said something that, and I'm not going to say no names because everybody's going to figure it out on their own. But he was like, when I got out of jail, the person that was supposed to fuck with me the hardest ain't paid me no attention. And I know you got my back. So come see what I got and fuck that other dude. And I was like, all right.
Is it the same dude who's not doing anything with his life?
I think we're on the same page.
Yeah.
So you're about 99.9999% accurate on that one.
Yeah.
So me, my ex-business partner, and my DJ at the time, Flip, shout out to Flip.
Flip, the one that lives in Washington
now?
Oh,
yeah,
we love Flip.
That's
okay, very cool.
Fucking brother from another
mother. Yeah, he's a sweetheart. And I love his whole family.
Flip was like...
They're awesome.
It's funny, too, because on the way there... We pull up. It was when Struggle had his Mass Bomb studio in the office building.
Mm-hmm.
And we pull up. Jelly comes out. Braids are gone. He's got a fresh fade. He's all fresh as hell. Struggles braids are gone. It's been like 4 years since I've seen these guys. I was like, man, y'all's glow up is beautiful. So Jelly picks me up so tight. He popped every bone in my back and my sides.
Doesn't he give the best bear hugs?
Oh my God, yes.
I love those.
So he picked me up. He's like, what are you doing, Bubba?
You're just like, dangling.
Yeah, my feet are just like kicking. He's got me in midair. I'm just like, I'm here to listen to some music, Jelly. He's like shaking me. He's like, guess what I just set up for us? I was like, what? He was like, I got us 2 weeks in Panama City Beach, spring break. We got 6 shows booked. We leave next week. I'm like, dude, I got kids. I can't just, I got to figure this out. He's like, you figure it out.
Shit,
Bubba, you got baby mamas. Okay. Now tell them bitches to figure it out.
Story of his life. That's how he still is.
Tell them bitches to figure it out. Take them to their grandparents' house. I don't give a fuck what you got to do. Make them 100 Hot Pockets. Put them in the microwave. I don't care. He's like, we got 6 shows in PCB. He's like, I'm taking 10,000 Deal or No Deal mixtapes, and we're giving them all out for free, and we're going to flood them. And by day, like, 4 on and down in Panama City, almost every car on the strip was jamming fucking No Deal or No Deal.
Aww.
And, I mean, it was just like we was constantly looking at each other. I'm like, dude, this is it, bro. You're something special, bro.
I told him that, too, when I first met him.
But I hadn't like even the first time I heard him sing, you know, he would just walk around the studio, walk around the house humming shit.
Mm-hmm.
But when we did the Snow album and he sung Pain No More, she won't feel that pain no more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, bro, when did you write that? He said, I wrote that in prison, Bubba. I've been sitting on this for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And the chick that was in the car with us is fucking boohooing, crying while he's singing. And I'm like, this is what you do to people. I mean, I'm tearing up at watching her cry. And I'm just like, Jelly, look, you're one of the most amazing rappers on the planet, but you've got to start crossing the singing mm-hmm. and rapping. And dude, that's your calling, bro. That's why I like it, the rhyming. Man, just seeing him up there, man, I teared up so big. It was just like, God.
Yeah,
because I saw it before a lot of people did, and he's done a few interviews in the last, you know, year or so, and he makes sure he lets people know. White saw that shit before anybody did.
Mm-hmm.
And
he loves you. Patrick Landschall. That's Patrick, all I hear.
So adorable when they're together.
Oh no, I love when they're together. It's like, dude, like, they
got me tearing up right now.
No, sure. No, Jay really loves you, dude. Like
Houlihan.
Yeah, Houlihan. Patrick Houlihan. Yep, he loves you so much. Like, anytime he talks about you, he literally lights up. And like, he always wants to dedicate so much attention and time to you. That's why he was like real picky about when he sits down with you, because he's like, wants to invest himself in your whole situation. Yeah. You know, it's just the cutest thing. You guys have the cutest relationship.
Well, like, even at the Ryman, when they gave him, you know, when the lady told him about the Grand Ole Opry, like, after she walked off and stuff, I walked over and I put my hand on his shoulder. I was like, congratulations. I mean, turn around, pick me up again. What are we doing, Bubba? How did I get here? I said, brother, you are the GOAT. You deserve all this shit. You're the GOAT, bro. You're the fucking GOAT, man.
To this day, my favorite album that my husband has done is No Filter 2 with you.
No Filter 2 is retarded.
I bump that shit all the time.
I jam. I listen to it on almost every road trip.
Dude, I love No Filter 2. I'm like, when can we put this on fucking Instagram and shit? Like, I want to be able to put it in my stories when I'm half naked.
No Filter 1 and 2 are bangers, man.
Yeah.
And see, that's why, like, you know, like when she reached out to you about the whole Wes thing, you know, Wes, No Filter 1, that was all Wes pushing that to get that budget for us, to get that tour bus, to get that fucking 10x10 backdrop made and shit. You know, just the last week I've really just been just reminiscing on all the shit that dude really did for all of us. And like,
yeah, it was definitely a
he definitely loss. Believed in Jelly like a motherfucker. He believed in me. And it's just, you know, when you got somebody that believes that much in what you do that's no longer here, it's tough, you know?
Yeah, especially that somebody that's seen you guys from the beginning, you know, because you guys are such loyal souls, too. That's one thing I do, like, me coming from the West Coast, the men on the West Coast fucking are at each other's throats. They don't give a fuck. They're snakes to each other, and I'll be the first one to say it. But you guys out here have, like, such a camaraderie. Even if you don't really fuck with each other 24/7, right, you guys fuck with each other.
Like, even, you know, me and Jelly's gotten into plenty of arguments and fucking different fights shit. But, like, as soon as we see each other again, it's like, what was that all about?
Come here,
give me a hug.
Because you guys are brothers. That's what it is.
It's a brotherly love. Mm-hmm. It ain't like we're friends. We've been doing this. We've been rocking for shit since 2004, basically. I mean, shoot, we're going on a 20-year friendship, man.
Yeah, no, you guys, it's definitely special what you guys have. Let's navigate into when you and Nicole met. So when did you guys first cross paths?
Well, technically, we crossed paths when she was about 7 years old, 8 years old at a fucking Blockbuster, and I didn't even look at her that way. She
was renting Little Mermaid.
Well, after my Little Mermaid days.
Well, it was funny because Blockbuster really was my last job. When Paul said, all right, it's time to start recording, I literally took my shirt off right then, threw my shirt at the manager, and was like, deuces. Rolled out of my homeboy's two-door cutlass.
Well, thank God, because
Pat, loud as hell.
Blockbuster's out of fucking business anyways. Are we good, Mimi?
There's still one left.
Are we good? Okay, I was just checking. Is there? Oh, yeah. It's in Oregon. I just watched the fucking.
I did too. It was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it.
You guys want to watch a good fucking documentary? Watch the Von Dutch documentary. It'll blow your fucking mind.
Really?
It's insane.
We started, but Crown won that night.
Well, get past the first one or two episodes, and that motherfucker is. Yeah, it's it blows your mind.
I started watching. Actually, I made it like the second episode, and you passed out, but I turned it off.
Oh, well, Crown beat it's me.
Crazy. But
all right. So besides meeting when she was seven, when did you guys
fast forward to that part?
So I was a bartender at 152 on Beale Street, which was like the VIP club that was open till 5 a.m. that no one ever wanted to go to, but everybody ended up there. Mm-hmm. And he walked up to my bar one day, and my friend Renee was bartending. She was like, Lil White's over there. I was like, oh, hold on. And I just went, I picked up my Crown and Coke.
And I mean, you will croak if you drink too many of them. So,
I handed him a Crown and Coke, and I was like, here you go, Crown and Coke. And he was like,
how the fuck did you know what I like? I listen to your music.
Aww. Like, if anyone offered you anything but a Crown and Coke, then they're...
So, like, yeah. for like, maybe, what, the next 2 to 3, 4 years, every time I would come up there, I would pass all the other bartenders.
Four years it took you to get in her pants?
Well, no, I was married. She was
married.
Okay,
gotcha.
Time, and I was going through single and, Lil White mode.
Yeah. Okay,
I was trying to hit everything that had a moist spot on it.
Oh, moist.
I know. That's the only time a man should be able to use that word. When it's talking about a vagina.
He did try
a wet spot.
Like, the general manager was like, she's married, White. Leave her alone.
All right, whatever. And then I would bring like bitches from out of town from like being on the road. I did come into Memphis and I'd bring them in 152. She would do one of two things. She would make them a little tiny ass drink that didn't have no alcohol in it to where the bitch would not be fuckable ready. Or she would double up my drinks to where I'd be just like unable to perform.
He would get his Crown and Coke and he'd like order these females like fucking like some pussy ass like sex on the beach shit. And I'm like, you know she's not getting drunk on those, right? She's just an actual whore and she's using alcohol as an excuse to be a slut for the night. I was like,
these are facts.
And we love whores. Don't get me wrong. I love me a good whore.
Gotta be open about it though.
Like, right. She's like, don't act like you're not a whore.
So then he would get a shot of Fireball or something. I'm like, well, do you want to take a shot with me? Like, so you want to take a shot by yourself? Because I was like, or he's like, I'm not buying shots for these bitches. Like, no. I was like, well, I'll take a shot with you because I'm the bartender. You don't got to buy me a shot, but you're not going to take shots solo. Nobody does that.
Right.
And he'd be drunk as shit by the end of the night. And looking back now, he'd be like, you do realize you cock blocked me.
I'm
like,
a bunch of times.
Sorry, not sorry. Whoopsies, didn't mean to.
So and it's funny. I just told her this on the way here. Like, I'd say like the week before I really asked her out, I broke up with like four bitches. Because I had a bitch in Ohio, a bitch in Indiana.
That's how Jay was.
A bitch in Atlanta, a bitch in Florida. Two bitches.
A lot of work. Little scurvy hoes.
It was a lot of work. That's why I just got to the point where they all knew about each other.
You can't even match your socks. How did you keep up with all
That's what I say to Jay. Oh, I'm like, how?
I called them different names, and then I started calling all of them babe.
Yeah, that's what I do. I call them all baby.
Everybody's honey and darling and babe.
Yeah. So I literally was just like, you know what? I'm sick of you bitches. Like, because... Two of them found out a bit about each other and went on this Facebook fucking rant calling me everything in the book. He's a slut. He's a whore. He's fucked me. And then all these other bitches start chiming in. He fucked me too and left me in a hotel room at 3 o'clock. I'm like, oh my God, this is getting out of hand.
This is getting bad. You're lucky this wasn't during the Me Too movement.
Jesus. I swear to God, I told her. I said, there's going to be allegations in the future.
Allegedly.
Just give you a heads up. But so I finally just broke up with these four girls that I'd been talking to. You know, I didn't go see them all the time. I just top it up, go see them when I could or whatever. And I just broke it off with all four of them. And I was like, you know what? I'm done with bitches for a minute. Let's get back to the studio. Let's get back to the bag.
Yeah.
Fuck these hoes. Don't worry about the bitches. When the right one comes along, she'll come along. And I swear to God, Bunny, the second I quit looking, I go up to motherfucking sidecar. Or I mean, 152. A buddy of mine had just gotten out of jail. He just did like 2 years in jail. And it was one of our homegirls' birthday, Tori Hudev. She's a lesbian, so she was going out with like 30 lesbians, and I was going to be the only guy with them.
Oh, man's dream.
So I'm
dream.
Like, fuck yeah, let's go. So I called Paul, my buddy, not DJ Paul, right. My buddy Paul from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Paul, you just got out of jail. You just did 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. I know you ain't seen 30 lesbians. Yeah, scissoring.
You ain't seen some drunk lesbians getting
it
on.
Do you want to go with me to 152?
That's pretty much what my whole bar was probably about this sad, because I was like in the back corner now, and like yeah. All my regulars just swarm. So you like see the whole club, and you see like 30 females just grinding on each other, making out, and it's me throwing drinks at them.
I'm over here like, Paul's over here like, this has been the greatest day of my life. He was like, I don't even want to fuck none of these bitches. I was like, well, just to let you know,
you can't.
You're not. They don't want. You could try. I've tried. So they don't want me. I'm famous, motherfucker. You just got out of prison. So it was her birthday night, and I remember I walked up to the bar. I was telling Paul, I was like, look, it's fun kicking with all these lesbians and stuff because it's cool to just walk in with the only guy with like 30 bitches around my arms and shit. Mm-hmm. I was like, but this shit ain't what I want. It's not what I want. And I went to the bar, and she come out from behind the bar and gave me a big hug, which has never happened. Usually it's Crown and Coke. How you been, white? Good to see you.
Well, she kept it respectful because she was married.
I'll just throw her 20, 30 bucks before she even gives me my drink. I'm like, here, put that in your boot or wherever the fuck you put that. That's your tip for the night. And, she came out from behind the bar and gave me the biggest hug onto my right foot up in the air and like just holding, squeezing me and shit. And I'm like, something's changed. This ain't the same chick I saw 2 weekends ago. And one of my homies that works security up there, Rowdy goes, hey, White, she's going through a divorce. Man, I pounced like a
no,
tiger.
No, he yelled it.
Yeah, it was loud.
You walked up
to
me and you were like, so when are you going to be, like, he like, locked me in behind my bar. He's like, so when are you going to be single? And I was like, Rowdy yells over, she's going through a divorce right now. I looked back at her.
I was like, oh, really?
I was just trying to whore out for a little while and just get all the, but I guess you just threw me under the bus. Thanks.
Threw you under the tour bus and I scooped your ass up, put you in the cargo department. But no, like I asked her out.
Did you guys fuck that night?
No, God, no. I wouldn't have.
What kind of proper fucking etiquette is this?
I wouldn't have wanted nothing to do with her.
We've been through
so
much bullshit.
Your friend is the opposite.
Oh, I know that. I mean, we are yin and yang for a reason.
Yeah.
But no, it was just like every woman that I'd talked to in the last 5 years that I'd been single for my baby mama fucked me that night.
Right.
And it was just like, no, no.
Well, I told him no.
Well, technically, I had to rape Jay. You
she
know,
told me no like four literally. Times. I asked her out 3 times, and finally the fourth time I just walked up and I said, like, look, I'm not asking you what time you get off work tonight. I'm not asking you what you're doing tomorrow. And I'm not asking you what you're doing next weekend. How would you like to go get sushi on a Wednesday at 7 p.m.? I will pick you up.
Sushi?
And I will
I'll go with
off.
Anybody for sushi.
Well, that's how you get in her pants. You just fucking offer her food.
It's a fucking right. aphrodisiac, too.
Women love food.
So she ends up sending me a picture or something at the pool, and I'm like, oh, what apartment you at? You got a pool at the apartment? She's like, no, this is my house. My house has a pool. And I'm like, ooh, check. Okay. Pull up to her house.
Had no idea I was a nurse during that.
I did not know she was a nurse.
Wait,
I didn't know she had her big girl job, too.
Pull your mic down towards your mouth. There you go.
I didn't know she had her big girl job, so I'm like, wait a minute. This motherfucker drives a black Camaro, got her own two-story house with a big, badass pool in the back.
That's right.
Check. She's a nurse, not just a bartender. That means insurance and fucking salary. Check. And it just hit me. I was like,
oh, and then I wouldn't come see him until like my kids were asleep.
Yes. No. And I respected
like,
that.
Not getting a babysitter. I respected that so much, though.
As a father, I respected that so much. Because there's been so many times girls would like, I'm like, well, I got my daughter. I can't go. Well, why don't you just let her mom watch her? No, because it's my time. I have my daughter.
Yeah.
Bitch, if you don't understand that, I don't want you nowhere around me. So when she told me, she was like, I'm not going anywhere until my kids are asleep. And I was like, oh, she's a good girl.
Aww.
I was like, and then, of course, once I get with her, I found out she's one of the dirtiest minded little nasty little bitches on the planet.
Captain Perv in the house.
And then not only that, on our first date, I swear to God, she looked like a fucking librarian.
Oh, I didn't have makeup on.
No skin
showing. I wore like
showing.
A sweater, jeans, because he's used to like booty shorts and my titties
he
hanging
said,
out. Like,
he said the first date she looked like a fucking librarian.
But I like the librarian look. I mean, I was like,
ooh. I was going to say, so did that. Was that part of your plan, though? You were like, yes. Look, if this motherfucker really wants to be with me, he's going to just fucking have to deal with what he gets? Or like, is there like a plan behind it?
It was like, just like no filter. Yeah. It was just like, this is me. This is what I do. I'm a mom first.
Yeah.
I don't get, like, I put makeup on for you today.
Yeah.
I you probably won't wear makeup for like 5 more days.
Bitch, like, I don't look like this when I wake up. Okay. Trust me. It's a process.
But see, at the same time, I liked it because I've obviously seen what she looks like in little tight shorts and her tits all pushed mm-hmm. up and makeup on at the bar when she's working, getting her tips. So to see her just come out of her house, just natural.
I think I wore Birkenstocks too.
You had Birkenstocks on. Yeah, I was like, oh my God.
I went as plain Jane as it could go. He was like,
but
you
no,
look
I, I like, did some smart. Nice. I did something very smart on the way there. I told Wendell, it was back when Wendell was working for me. I said, all right, look, we're going to do something right quick, and this is going to tell the tale if this woman's a keeper or not.
Stay tuned to next week's episode to see what happens in part 2 of Dumb Blonde Podcast.